to the first episode of Anything But Standard, a new podcast brought to you by our sponsors Magic Madhouse and broadcast through the MTG Cast Network. I am Mr. Shah, your host, and with me every week will be Mr. Renfield, my co-host. Hello, Mr. Renfield.
Hello.
And we're bringing you a guest from my neck of the woods this week, Mr. Jamie Kyle Williams.
Hello.
Right, so before we get rolling into everything, give you a little bit of background on who we are and why we want to talk to the world. We are three Magic players from various parts of the United Kingdom. I currently live in Bath, Southwest England. And I'm 30 years old. I've been playing Magic pretty much since Magic existed as a game. Spent most of my time as a tabletop Magic player. And then around the time of Innistrad, moving just into Return to Ravnica, sort of got the competitive bug. Had taken a few hiatuses from the game over the years. And jumped back in, started going to FNMs for the first time, started playing actual Tier 1 Magic. Here I am a few years later, and I'm an absolute addict of the modern format, which, as we'll get onto later, is why Jamie's with us today. I am also an altarist. I run the altering company Mr. Shy Paints Cards, and I paint on lots and lots of Magic cards for people. We'll get on a little bit later, perhaps, to where you can see some of those wonderful creations. But if you want to just look at my work, it's facebook.com/MrShyPaintsCards. Mr. Renfield, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Okie dokie. Well, I'm Renfield. I run the Altus group that Mr. Shy was just quite skillfully speaking about. And, I've been playing on and off. Got started Mercers, and then I kind of gave up after I think it was the Dissension block, and then
I've got a good 20 years for you then, Renfield, getting close to.
But I got back into it during the Innistrad block, and I've kind of been playing ever since. And I think the thing that's kind of kept me here is the fact that I do the Altars group, and I can't escape that now.
It has become a beast, hasn't it, over the last few
years? It is a joy and a chore at the same time. It is absolutely wonderful, but also at times it's interesting. So, the reason why the kind of this podcast is it's something that Mr. Shy has wanted to do for a while, and I was like, I can help you do that, that's not a problem. We're wanting to go through what modern and brewing need, it's basically anything that's not standard but magic related, because there are many podcasts about standard. We also want to bring up community issues and have guests like Jamie.
Hey Jamie.
Hi, how's it going?
Renfield, would you like me to tell everybody exactly why we've got Jamie here with us today?
Go for it.
Okay, so Jamie is a local player in my area in Bath. Me and Jamie met, a year and a half ago now?
If not more.
Maybe a little bit more than that. And Jamie was the most casual of casual players when I first met him. And much like me, he very quickly got bitten by the bug, started turning up to FNM, started playing competitively, and fell in love massively with Modern. Jamie's also a big lover, I think you'll agree with me on this, Jamie, of altering and of magic artwork. Bought altars from me. He's even learnt a few techniques himself and produced a few nice little pieces. I remember a dismember with the Black Knight from the Monty Python show.
That is still in the back of my folder.
Yeah, as it rightly should be. Don't ever trade it away.
It is pretty sweet.
It's one of your first. You've got to keep it. And so basically, because we're a new podcast, We have got big plans, and we want to bring you some big famous guests that will get you all excited. But really, for this first episode, we just wanted to, be humble and bring someone in from our local community who would share our enthusiasm for the things that we're into. So, as I said, predominantly, as Renfield quite rightly pointed out, we are a modern podcast, we are a casual and an EDH podcast. We also want to talk about community issues, we also want to talk about MTG politics. And so, because we've got quite a few things to talk about, it seems nice to just start off with someone local, someone that we know, and just have a friend round to help us settle into it, because I think we're all a little bit nervous. None of us have really done this before, am I right, Renfield?
Absolutely.
Very briefly, before we dive into our itinerary for this week, Jamie, you've just been to GP Lyon.
I have, yes.
Tell us about GP Lyon.
Well, I didn't actually play in the main event, as sealed isn't my jam.
Good guy.
Hence why I'm here. And so I just played Modern and Legacy all weekend.
All right. So what did you play in Modern?
In Modern, I played two decks. I played a Jeskai Ascendancy combo brew.
Is this with green?
This is with Life from the Loam, yeah.
Okay, good. Okay.
And the other deck was Boggles.
Boggles, Boogeyman.
Oh, yes.
You're making no friends, you know?
If I can find a sample of a boo and a hiss, it's going on this section.
That's fine. I decided to take down an 8-man with Boggles. I did, came away with a lot of prizes.
Yeah, so, first place?
Yeah, I got first place in 8-man.
Nailed it!
Didn't drop a game.
Good guy.
So.
Good guy. That's impressive, really impressive. How was the? How did you find the standard of play? Good quality players, or
there was a lot of good quality players. I think in France, playing Jeskai Ascendancy for one was very difficult. Explaining people triggers when no one speaks your language.
Yeah, language barrier can be an issue at the best of times.
Yeah.
I mean, even playing GPs and PTQs in this country, you'll occasionally encounter people whose English isn't great. You know, not to any detriment of themselves, but. I can imagine. I've never been to a European GP, but I can imagine it must be difficult.
Yeah, it was difficult, but the level of play was definitely very high.
Higher than your average FNM.
Oh, much so. Much
okay.
So.
Good news. And Legacy?
Legacy, I decided to play Dredge.
Which version?
I played Mana Dredge, but without Lions Eye Diamonds.
Okay.
Because I'm very new to the format.
And Lions Eye Diamonds are £1 million each.
They've actually come down to $80.
$80?
Yes. Which is why I'm looking at them again.
I don't feel so bad now, because like, when I got back into the game, I sold off 3 Lions Eye Diamond for £90.
Whew. That's not too bad. That's not too bad at all. I think when I bought my first set, I was building Ad Nauseam Tendrils, which he's laughing because I bought the deck shell off of him. And it's quite a funny story, to be fair. It was during a period where I was young and free and single and stupid, and I was throwing all of my money at Magic the Gathering. And I bought the deck shell off of Jamie, and it contained none of the mana base and no LEDs. Obviously, those being the most expensive things. But we had all the Brainstorms, Cabal Therapies, etc., etc. Needed a few sideboard cards, but they're not particularly expensive. And I said to Jamie, I'm going to make you jealous now, because I'm going to have this done in a month or two. And I proceeded to buy 4 Lion's Eye Diamonds, 2 Underground Seas, a Tropical Island. Didn't get round to buying a Volcanic Island before I then went, oh, spent all my money, and I'm not playing Magic very much right now, so I should probably sell off this entire deck. But I bought that set of Lion's Eye Diamonds for £180 for the 4, which is, what, £45 each? I mean, I think they were at 100 flat at the time by Star City Games, so...
Yeah, 100, 120, something
yeah,
ridiculous.
So, I mean, you know, I could have been paying up to £60 each for them, and managed to come away with them for £45 each. I think that's fine.
That's not too bad.
And I think, actually, when I sold them, for £50 each. So I think I actually made a bit of a gain on them.
Fair.
Which was okay. I did, admittedly, acquire one of those Underground Seas by altering as well. I painted a couple of pieces for somebody, and they paid me with an Underground Sea.
Cheater.
Well, you call it cheating, I call it resourcefulness, but that's fine. So, Jamie's week in Magic has been spent at GP Lyon. Renfield, what's your week in Magic been like?
I'm currently working on a Garth Guru of Spores deck.
For what format?
EDH Commander.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know...
Tell us.
I am a bit of a strange bunny in the fact that Commander is my primary format. And
I don't think that's that bizarre these days, to be honest. Well, I know a lot of people like that.
Well, yeah. Standard doesn't interest me at the moment, and there's just not a massive amount out there. I mean, Modern Yeah, I keep looking at it going, yeah, I don't really get much of a chance to play modern. Yeah.
For sure.
And when I do, I play Land Destruction.
Because you're horrible.
It's another do-hiss moment, I should think. Yeah.
This is an interesting point, actually. Very, very briefly, I don't want to go into too much detail about this, but I know for a lot of people, they decry the barrier to entry into modern. I'm not sure how much of an issue you found that to be, but I know when you speak to a lot of people, they say that the barrier to entry is really the main thing that keeps them out of the format. The fact that there isn't a single deck that's competitive that will, you know, give them a good fighting chance at a PPTQ that doesn't contain a hefty amount of format staples, including fetchlands and shocklands. And they want a modern deck to play modern PPTQs, because that's the main incentive to get into the format, because there's a whole season of tournaments dedicated to it, and now GP support as well.
I think there the problem is, people get too wrapped up in the meta, too wrapped up in the top 8 decks, too wrapped up in, you know, what's going on, like, on the top 8 websites and things, and at the various PTQs and GPs and all that.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, coming from your experience as a casual player, I mean, I think there's definitely a lesson we can all learn in not assuming that we have to always play one of the tier one decks. I mean, when Boggles first showed up at tournaments, it wasn't considered competitive. It was a bit of a joke, and everyone's like, well, someone's playing 8 hexproof creatures on a load of auras. Look at this joker, you know. And I think, you know, a lot of decks have started their life like that, sort of being something that someone just kind of took a chance on. I think really for me, the issue is that a lot of people consider the format solved. And because it's such a wide format, they're a bit scared maybe to have a play. So they develop this impression that they have to build one of the tier one top 8 lists. Because looking at such a wide card pool is intimidating. You know, it's really hard to look at everything from 8th edition forward and say, yeah, I feel pretty confident that I can, you know, build something that will be competitive with no previous experience of the format.
As I say, I think, you know, if you look at the outsiders, like, you know, like Boggles was, Land Destruction is always hilarious. Yeah. If you ramp it just right and run the right amount of removal, then it counters everything. Blue counter spells, I've seen, like, a very basic, you know, deck full of commons and uncommons do quite well just from countering everything. And I've seen people get really salty about that. So it's not putting the deck in terms of cost. It's more like how you're looking at the deck and how you're looking at the format. And if you consider it as being, you know, a solved Rubik's Cube, well, you can always mess up a Rubik's Cube. You can always reset it.
I guess the thing is that, you know, you have to accept that a lot of people are going to look at tier one lists either for their inspiration, or they're going to at least look at them for what they expect their competition to be. And, you know, if you are very confident and you think you can look at what you expect the competition to be and brew something that you think will be competitive, then, you know, power to you. I mean, that's something that I try to do all the time. I've been playing Modern for a long time now, and I love trying to take on the format from a new angle. I love trying to do something, even if it's just taking a list that I've seen elsewhere and having a little play with it. And that's basically what I've spent my week in Magic doing, funny enough. My week in Magic, I wrote an article mid last week for one of the other podcasts on the MTG Cast Network, Card Knock Life. They're a bunch of really nice guys from Wisconsin in the States, and their cast is excellent, by the way. Anyone that subscribes to the MTG Cast Network, give them a listen, support them. They're really cool guys, and they give a lot of excellent information. They do standard and modern mostly, and I've been writing for them for a few weeks now, doing modern articles for them. So yeah, I wrote this article for them, and it was basically to do with, a while ago, I saw Caleb Durwood take down an MTGO 8-man with a Teemer Delver deck, And it was traditional blue-red Delver in most places, but he was playing four Tarmogoyf, obviously, because if you're playing green, you're playing Tarmogoyf in Modern. That is how it is these days. There are very few green decks that don't play Tarmogoyf.
Isn't Tarmogoyf blue?
Well, in spirit, Tarmogoyf is definitely blue, but the deck also plays blue cards, so that explains what he's doing there. So they were playing four Tarmogoyf, which is, you know, fairly obvious. They were also playing four Hooting Mandrills, two copies of Curiosity, the one mana blue enchantment that reads whenever enchanted creature deals combat damage to a player
or a card.
And they were playing four copies of Disrupting Shoal, Modern's nearest port for Force of Will. Now, this is the kind of deck that kind of makes my creative juices really start to go. I look at potentially free counter magic, card draw engines, aggression, and I love playing tempo decks anyway. I'm a big fan of tempo because I really like decks where there are no free wins. You win by inches, not miles, and you have to focus on every single play you make. Being punished for your mistakes in Magic is one of the best ways to develop as a player, I feel. Playing decks that give you free wins do not make you into a better player. And that's why I've always steered away from things like Splinter Twin and Affinity. And these are decks that I have tried. I've built them in fairly recent times and given them a go. But I tend to not play them because I think that they make you a worse Magic player when you play them regularly. It's you know, your red-green Urzatron decks and your Grixis Control decks and your Delver decks. These are the decks that really challenge you to make correct decisions in the moment under pressure, and therefore you improve as a player. And that was kind of something that I wanted to do with this brew. So I looked at this team of Delver list and I started to re-brew it the way that I would play it. And, you know, being realistic, there may have been some suboptimal decisions here or there, and I may be playing a few cute pet cards here or there, and Jamie has told me off for some of my decisions while we've been talking on Facebook this week. Me and Jamie actually had quite a lengthy verging on argument yesterday discussing this deck, didn't we?
It felt heated, and I'm glad it was over Facebook and not face-to-face. Some fists may have flown.
You should have saved it here.
Well, the problem is, you see, that me and Jamie are both... we're quite happy to swear at each other, and I didn't really want to do that on the cast. I thought it'd be nice to keep the cast PG-13, so... instead of effing and jeffing at him on the air, I effed and jeffed at him over Facebook instead. And in the end, we resolved that we both have very different play styles and that we play and build decks for very different reasons and in very different ways. But I wanted, if I can stop rabbiting, to talk about this Team of Delver deck a little bit, because I actually think pretty cool deck. It is bloody expensive, I'm not going to lie. It's not one to build if you're going to your first Modern FNM. It's one to build if you own a lot of Modern staples and want to build something a little bit different. So I'm going to give you a quick rundown of my deck list, and then I'm just going to chat about it for a few minutes, if that is okay with you two fine gentlemen.
That's more than fine with me.
Okay, so in my three-colour Delver deck, I am playing 20 lands, made up of 4 Misty Rainforest, 4 Scalding Tarn, 3 Steam Vents, 1 Breeding Pool, 1 Stomping Ground. That's my Fetch Shock package. And then for my little random extras, I have 2 Sulphur Falls, 1 Lumbering Falls, which is the new blue-green creature land from Battle for Zendikar, 1 Desolate Lighthouse, 2 Islands and 1 Forest. Traditionally, the 3-colour Delver decks, we had a look at some analytics, didn't we, the other day, Jamie, and they're playing sort of 19 and a half lands on average.
Yes.
I'm playing a 20th land because I'm treating the Desolate Lighthouse as a spell. I want to be able to loot. Lands are harder to interact with than Planeswalkers. We will get to that later, but there is a split of Jace Rings Prodigies and Desolate Lighthouses, basically to facilitate looting and graveyard recursion. Then we have 23 instants and sorceries, made up of the 4 obligatory Serum Visions that go in every single Delver deck ever. 4 Disrupting Shoal, because that card is too damn cute and I needed to play it. 4 Lightning Bolt, because it's the most powerful card in the entire format, bar none. 2 Vapor Snag, just as a little extra bit of removal that plays into our tempo game nicely. 3 Mana Leak, which I still genuinely and quite controversially think is the best Counterspell in Modern. And Jamie's making cut the throat sounds in front of me because I know that he's a Remand addict. I've played Delver variants quite a bit, and I've always found Mana Leak to be my go-to. I'm then playing two Electrolyze, one Roast, one Become Immense as my super spicy secret. Tending someone with a Tarmogoyf feels like quite good fun. One Spell Snare, and again, I think I'm going to be on the receiving end of the boo hiss. Three Anticipate to finish off my instants and sorceries.
I really like that card.
I really like that card too, and...
You're welcome.
Jamie's suggestion, absolutely. It's a bit slow for Modern, I'll be honest. It is slower than I would like it to be. If it was, you know, one mana, scry one, draw a card at instant speed, I wouldn't feel upset.
That would be busted.
Maybe. I'm of the opinion that Modern needs a card like that. I think, you know, Brainstorm, Ponder and Preordain are far too good.
If it was instant speed sleight of hand, that wouldn't be busted.
Let's scry one, draw a card, man. It's not that bad. What are you scared of? Scry one, draw a card.
I tell you what you want a reprint in Modern. You want a reprint of Spy Network.
Spy Network? Yeah. I don't even know that card.
Do you not? It is.
Tell me what it does.
It's one mana. For an instant, it was printed in the Onslaught block.
Mm-hmm.
It's look at target player's hand, the top card of that player's library, any face down creatures he or she controls, look at the top four cards of your library, and then put them back in any order for one mana.
That's pretty good. If it had draw a card on the end of it, I'd be very happy, but that's pretty good. That'd be alright in Modern.
You'd play that.
You'd probably play it. So to finish this list, we have 17 creatures, a little bit more threat-dense than you would expect. I may have edited this really badly. Yes, we have 15 creatures, my apologies. I edited the contents of my deck list without editing the markers on it, and I'm very unprofessional, and I should be very much ashamed of myself. 15 creatures made of 2 Jace Rin's Prodigy, 4 Delver of Secrets, 4 Tarmogoyf, 2 Young Pyromancer, 3 Snapcaster Mage. Very briefly, just to explain that creature split, the Jaces are there because people try to beat these tempo decks by making the game go long. Jace is a card that only gets better as the game goes longer. In creature mode, it acts as a loot, letting you throw away an irrelevant card in your hand for a look at the top card of your library, which is obviously exactly what you want to be doing. In Planeswalker mode, it gives you sorcery speed, snapcastering, which, you know, there's a few sorceries in your deck that work pretty awkwardly with Snapcaster Mage. Roast is a very good example of a sorcery that you don't want to have to Snapcaster, but you might need to cast a second time. And so it just seemed ideal to have a means and a ways in there of staying mana positive and having a bit of resilience when the game goes long. And I think you're so interested in that, you know, messing up the mana base a little bit by playing a Lighthouse is also okay. The 4 Delver of Secrets are there because they're 4 Delver of Secrets and it's a Delver of Secrets deck. The 4 Tarmogoyf are there because it's a big, beefy, fast clock and it's almost always a 4-5 in this deck. Sadly, you never get to put a Planeswalker into your own graveyard because Jace, when in your graveyard, is always a legendary creature, not a Planeswalker. Bit of a shame. 2 Young Pyromancer because you're fully loaded on 1 drops and you've also got a free spell in there, so... You know, Young Pyromancer is at its best when you're spending as little mana and casting as many spells as possible. And this deck, I think, can utilise them fairly well. And then 3 Snapcaster Mage, just because whilst the Colligan's Command decks want to constantly have a Snapcaster Mage in hand and constantly be recycling that Snapcaster Mage, I feel like when you draw multiples of Snapcaster Mage in Delver decks, you're usually only aiming to have 3 or 4 lands on the battlefield. Snapping back a 3-drop like Electrolyze, for example, almost never happens. Snapping back a Disrupting Shoal and actually paying mana for X almost never happens. It's not really realistic to expect those kind of things from your 3-colour, pseudo-19-land tempo deck. Whilst I see a lot of 4 copies of Snapcaster Mage, I just thought on this occasion that 3 suited more. But I know that's something, again, that you disagree with, Jamie. You are a big fan of 4 Snapcaster Mages in tempo decks, right?
It depends how you've built your deck. If you're the kind of tempo deck that wants to jam Thought Scour, then I think you need to be playing the full 4 Snapcaster. But in a deck that's quite tight on mana, being Snapcaster overloaded, as you say, can be an issue.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I am playing a few 3-drops and quite a few 2-drops as well. Obviously, the anticipates are really awkward with Snapcaster Mage because they're so good when you get to Snapcaster them back. As we found out earlier in testing, actually.
It was cheeky and amazing.
It was wonderful. And found me exactly what I needed. But, you know, sometimes you just don't have 4 lands and Snapcastering a 2-drop doesn't always happen. So it's, you know, it's difficult, but it's in a very prototype state at the moment. I am still testing it. And, you know, we will see how it goes. I do have a sideboard built. The sideboard is a little bit shaky. It's kind of, at the moment, just built as a bit of a hedge for what I expect to play against. So I'm playing 2 Molten Rain, 2 Stubborn Denial, 2 Vendilion Click, because I own 2 foil Vendilion Click, and I really, really like showing them off. Which is actually also why I'm a little bit upset to not be playing 4 Snapcaster Mage, because I own 4 foil Snapcaster Mage, and I really like showing them off as well. But 2 Rending Volley, 2 Destructive Revelry, which is another one of the very important reasons to play green in this format at the moment. Destructive Revelry is really, really powerful, and seeing very little play in Modern. 1 Shatterstorm, because whilst the affinity matchup isn't that bad, having a Wrath against them is good. And Lantern Control is a deck that people still keep turning up with. Shatterstorm's pretty good against Lantern Control.
It is pretty good against them, if you can draw it.
If you can draw it, yeah. If they let you have it, you know. Which, bearing in mind, you're an Anticipate deck, so you're looking 3 cards down for it sometimes.
Exactly.
Which, you know, I think it's harder for them to control your draw step when you're looking 3 cards down.
And they always want to just give you land.
They do always want to just give you land when you only have 20. Pretty good. So, our Lantern Control match is alright. But yeah, I just think, you know, 1 Shatterstorm is worth a punt. And Unravel the Aether, because Keranos is mean. He is a very naughty boy, and he hurts you a lot, and I don't want to be hurt by him, so I want to shuffle him back into my opponent's library. 1 Izzet Staticaster, really good in Pyromancer Mirrors, really good against Affinity, and that's something people do not appreciate. They like to man up man lands and attack you with them. It is an instant speed answer to that. 3 mana, a little bit slow for that matchup, but it works. It's a good card. An extra Roast to shore up the matchups against Tarmogoyf, Gurmag Angler, and Tasiga, which everyone is playing at the moment. Everyone. And 1 Savage Knuckleblade, because I like to mess around and I wanted to try something a little bit different. Savage Knuckleblade is the kind of card that I would foresee bringing in against Grixis Control or against Scapeshift. These decks that have issues with haste creatures, issues with very specific removal requirements, that kind of thing. And possibly against Tarmogoyf decks as well, because, you know, if you untap with it, it does smash through a Tarmogoyf quite nicely. And since Lightning Bolt is the premier removal spell in the format and it has 4 toughness, you might just untap with it. So yeah, that's where I'm at the moment. I'm currently testing it. It's very new. I've only had it built for not even a week, and it's already been for a few revisions. I'm continuing to work on it. I will be trying it out in a few tournament settings, hopefully. I have some time off work coming up, and I would like to take it to an FNM. I would very much like to take it to a PPTQ when Modern Season starts back up. And I'm, you know, for the time being, that's what I'm going to be on. I may end up changing my mind again. I'm a bit addicted to Grixis Control. I have gone on and off of that deck several times since it became a deck, and so there's every chance that I'll end up back on it.
You could always do a Grixis Delver deck, because they work quite well.
Yeah, Grixis Delver's actually been... on MTGO, there's been quite a bit of Grixis Delver in recent months, hasn't there?
There has.
They're playing reduced numbers of the good Grixis cards, because they have to play a critical mass of 1-drops, and obviously the good Grixis cards are either Delve cards or things like Terminating Colligan's Command. But they've been pretty successful. I've seen some pretty solid results coming out of Grixis Delver. And, you know, if I do find the... I want to play some sort of tempo deck. That might be the, you know, but not this one. That might be the direction I go in. Jamie, at the moment you're playing Delverless Grixis Delver, is that what we're calling it?
I guess that's what you're calling it. It's my current brew, I guess.
Okay, well, we've got Jamie's deck list here. Jamie, do you want to read your deck list, or would you like one of us to read your deck list for you?
I don't mind.
Ren, would you like to read out Jamie's deck list so that he can have a little think about what he wants to say about it while we're talking about it?
Certainly can. Feel free to stop me any time now, Jamie, if you want to say anything about a specific card. But there's 19 land in this. There's 1 Blood Crypt, 2 Bloodstained Mire, 2 Islands, 1 Mountain, 4 Polluted Delta, 3 Scalding Tarn, 2 Steam Vents, 2 Swamp, 2 Watery Grave. That's a Grixis kind of flavour deck, certainly.
Yeah, I think the only thing that I may be used to seeing in those mana bases is usually the blue-black Fastland, Darkslick Shores.
Sure, Darkslick Shores.
And Sulphur Falls. Those two lands often turn up in those mana bases as well, and I noticed you've elected to play lots of fetches instead.
Yes, I did elect to play lots of fetches instead. The idea was that I just want to cast Tasiga and Gurmag Angler, as you might see later on in the deck, as soon as possible. I want to keep up with Goyf.
So you're trying to just play your spells on time?
Yeah.
Okay, Ren, carry on with this deck list, mate. Sorceries.
Okie dokie. There's 3 Inquisition of Kozliak, 4 Seaman Visions, and that's it for the sorceries. There's only 7 of them. There's 20 instants, 2 Zit Charm, 4 Lightning Bolt, 2 Remand, 2 Spell Pierce, 2 Spell Snare, 3 Terminate, 3 Thought Scour, 2 Vapor Snag. There's then 14 creatures, 3 Gurmag Angler.
That's the guy.
Which one's that one?
That's the big fish, the 5/5 with Delve. Six and a black?
He is 6 and a black.
6 and a black with Delve for a vanilla 5/5, and you would be amazed how powerful that is in Modern.
Yep.
Good lord.
He's showing up in Legacy and Vintage, I believe, now.
You've seen him in Vintage?
I've seen him in Vintage.
Who's playing him in Vintage? What Maverick is playing him in Vintage?
I can't remember where I saw it, but it was obscene.
The thing is, that's really exciting, because Vintage is a format full of Black Lotuses being sacrificed, Jitaxian Probes being cast on turn 1, Fetchlands being broken, and it's very, very common in Vintage for there to be 3 or 4 or even 5 cards in the graveyard straight away on turn 1.
Yeah, quite easily.
I can foresee Gurmag Angler as being almost, I would say, reliably castable on turn 1 in Vintage.
Yeah, I could see that easily.
Which is terrifying.
It is.
Turn 1, make my 5/5. Go, your move, creep.
Hold up Force of Will.
Sounds like great fun. And Jamie also has a sideboard for us, which is very kind of him.
I've Ren, not finished what we the got? Creatures.
Have you not?
No, you didn't get past Gurmag.
I didn't get past the fish.
I'm so sorry for interrupting you. Please carry on.
That's all right. You've got 4 Snappy, because, you know, Snapcaster Mage.
Snapcaster Mage. Best blue card ever printed.
Yeah.
You don't want to let me have that one, do you?
I've been known. He annoys me as a creature, but... yeah, as a card, he's quite snacky. I still reckon the best blue card I ever printed was Counterspell. But that's me.
Yeah.
Anyway, then you've got 2 Tasiga, because, yeah, Tasiga, he is pretty nice. He works well as a commander in the commander variant of this very deck.
Yeah, apparently he's been showing up as a really competitive commander in 1v1 EDH.
He has.
It's like the big list to beat in 1v1 at the moment, yeah.
He is.
I don't follow the format, but I could believe it.
See, I'm not big on the French EDH rules, but yeah, he is very competitive. And again, it's basically him and a load of mill stuff. And your finisher is either milling yourself and having Laboratory Maniac, or... milling your opponent.
I really dislike Labman decks in EDH. Really, really dislike them.
Well, it's like you've almost got twice the number of cards to get rid of.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. It's why mill as a strategy just doesn't work.
No.
Instead of trying to get your opponent from 20 life to 0, you're effectively trying to get them from 60 life to 0, or in the case of EDH, 100 life to 0. And your cards aren't that much more efficient.
So you say that, but I've got quite a competitive Crixis deck that's Nekazar the Mindvaser, and anything that you do in your library or your hand hurts you. And sometimes when I draw cards, it hurts you.
Interesting.
Carry on with this particular deck.
Yeah, let's not segue into Commander just yet. to be fair, me and Ren are big fans of Commander, so we will occasionally accidentally segue into Commander.
Finally, you've got four Young Pyromancer, which is a very strong, very strong card indeed. Oh, and I missed the Vendilion Click.
One Vendilion Click, that was an interesting one for me. I was a little bit confused over the Vendilion Click. It's, I've always liked them in sideboards in tempo decks, but I've never really liked them in the main. They can be a little bit slow, and sometimes you'll draw both of them, and you'll feel really annoyed at yourself. And I think, to be honest, it's me being a bit counter-traditional, because you do see them in main decks a lot.
Yeah, he's showing up in the main a lot, and I think as we started with this deck list, we were like, this is Delver, right? There was no Delver in the list at all.
No.
And I started brewing this deck, showed Mr. Shy this deck, and it was quite funny because he's like, oh, I'm brewing Delver as well, but you don't have Delvers, but it works out as the same deck.
Yeah, essentially you would feel like you're playing a mirror if you put this against a Grixis Delver list.
Definitely, and that's kind of what I was going with, was I wanted to be casting, Delver cards, but without Delver. So that's kind of where the clique comes in. It's because I want to actually still have some flyers that just gets over whatever chaff you're up to.
Yeah, I mean, Click's always been good because of the fact that it's a fast clock, because of the fact that you can cast it at instant speed, because of the fact that it has built-in disruption, which is something that a lot of decks are just crying out for.
Yep.
Regardless of how relevant it is to their game plan, it's just a handy thing to have access to.
Definitely.
People will play combo decks. You can't stop them.
Nope.
And disruption's really good against combo decks. It also happens to be quite good at control decks, and control decks are pretty good against Delver, so,
it just seems natural to play in the main, I think.
I definitely think there's very strong arguments to be made. However, speaking of strong arguments, your sideboard is what caused our strong argument on Facebook yesterday.
It's a thing of beauty.
So now, Mr. Renfield, I would like you to read out Jamie's sideboard, and I'm going to do my very best to stay silent by biting my arms and wrists for the entire length of this section. Because if I say anything, I might scream.
It's upsetting. It's an upsetting joke.
Thank you!
I'm not sure I want to play anymore.
It's enough to make you quit Magic. This card's crap. This card's crap. This card's crap. I'm not playing anymore. I'm going home. Go on, tell the good people what Jamie thinks a 15-card sideboard for a blue-red-black tempo deck looks like.
Bearing in mind this is entirely a brew, but I still think it's a thing of beauty.
No, you two talk about it. Go for it.
It's two Blood Moon. Bad in itself. You're a bad man. two Crackling Doom. One Fumble to Dust. Two Dispel. One Godless Shrine. One Exit Staticaster, one Kemenos, God of Storms, one Radiant Flames, and one Slaughter Games. What are you playing at?
Yeah, explain yourself, young man.
Oh, sorry. Two Stony Silence, and another Vendilion Click.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Our show notes have just scrolled onto a new page. I missed that as well.
Sure. So, when I build a sideboard, I kind of want to just pack cards that win you the game, almost. So, how Stu was playing Unravel the Aether to deal with Karanos, why don't just play Karanos and protect him? You play against Amulet Bloom, play Blood Moon. You play against Boggles, of which it's very on my radar after taking down an 8-man with it and seeing it quite a fair bit in Leon and in, where is it? It was at the RPTQ at Darksphere that I know.
For anyone listening in the States, Darksphere is one of the major stores in London, right? One of the major tournament organisers in London.
Major tournament.
Are they connected to a store, or...?
I think they are. I think that is the store, Darksphere.
Yeah, I mean, I've never played in any of their events personally, because I don't like playing in London. London is far too busy and aggro for me.
Yes.
But, Darksphere are a major, well-known tournament organiser in London. Please carry on.
Sure. And it's just showing up everywhere, and if you're not ready for it, it will kill you. So, best way to beat them, cast Crackling Doom. Yeah, I am playing Grixis, and that's why there's the Godless Shrine in the board.
You are doing such bad things to your mana base, you horrible man. I can't keep quiet about it. You're playing Black White Land in your three-colour deck.
Yep. Yes, I am.
You're playing 19 lands?
I am playing 19 lands.
19 lands?
And trying to cast Kuranos.
Oh, you're horrible. You're so horrible. I'm not going to tell you off. I promised myself that while we were on air, I was going to let you discuss it.
Yep.
And I was going to let you have your moment to explain yourself. So you tell us why you think it's acceptable to put a black-white land in your three-colour 19-land non-white deck.
Basically, I never want to draw Godless Shrine game one.
Okay.
I never want to see it game one, because if I have it in the main, they will expect Path to Exile, Stony Silence.
True, it will give away a white sideboard plan, for sure.
They will, and that's not what I want. I want them to just go, oh crap, I didn't sideboard for that. You know, Tron just go, I can't beat a Stony Silence, I didn't bring it in. You know, I didn't bring my Nature's Claims in, or whatever they're playing at the moment.
For sure.
So, it's also in the sideboard, because casting Kuranos is quite a hefty feat in 19 lands, so I would bring in the Godless Shrine there.
So, just tell me, what matchups are you bringing Kuranos in for?
Anything that plays counter spells, and also I would be bringing it in for long grindy games against something like Jund or Abzan.
Okay, so, because to me, what I feel like when I look at your sideboard is, I feel like you're not very... Well, yes, but after I've done screaming and mopped up the blood from my eyes and glued on a set of false nails because I've just chewed the old ones off, what I'm really thinking is you don't look massively well set up for the mirror. I see two dispel, one is it Staticaster. That's probably all you're bringing in for the mirror.
Sure. For the mirror, I'd actually bring in the Vendilion Clique, the Slaughter Games, as I'll get onto that in a second, Radiant Flames, Kuranos, the Staticaster, and the two Dispels.
So you're playing Kuranos in the mirror?
I would play Kuranos in the mirror.
Okay. Now, this is an interesting point for me, because I don't know how much experience you have against playing against tempo decks in Modern Ren, but for me, the way that I've always wanted to beat the tempo decks is by running out their early pressure and taking them into the late game where their top decks are much lower impact than mine. They're top decking one drops that don't do much, and I'm top decking three and four drops that win the game. That said, I'm mostly usually playing control and mid-range decks. I played a lot of Abzan, played a lot of Grixis control. In tempo mirrors, do you think that you want to drag games long, even though you know that they are incentivized to try and finish the game quickly, but you are also incentivized to try and finish the game quickly? Do you think that taking those games long is the right decision?
I feel like something in the mirror, because your cards line up so well against each other.
Well, you've got complete symmetry almost.
Yeah, it is almost complete symmetry that you want to trade cards one for one, get the 2-for-1s wherever you can, and once you're both ground down or you're still cards in hand, you cast absolute pummelers like Kuranos.
For sure. I mean, I have to say, after a bit more looking at things, I think your Kuranos very much fills the same role as my main deck Jace's. I think we're playing them for the same reasons. The difference is that I'm playing something main deck that can still be relevant early in the game, that can still do something on turn three.
Sure.
Whereas you're bringing something in from the sideboard for that game plan. In all truth, I think you're probably set up more to be a pure tempo deck. You're trying to apply early pressure, get the game over. I'm giving myself some pre-board assurance for the late game. And this is where we sort of ended up concluding that...
I still have Tasiga in the main.
You do have Tasiga, but like, how good is Tasiga in the late game? Like, when your deck isn't particularly threat-dense and all of your threats are X1s, and they've been electrolyzing and roasting you to... electrolyzing and bolting you to death all game, like... How good is Tasiga just to turn on their roast? Does it actually do anything?
The thing is they're well, if we're going deck for deck, mine versus yours, purely on paper, your one roast, two after board, has to deal with two Tasigas, three Gurmag Anglers.
Sure, but I do also have five draws at flashing back that roast.
Sure.
So, you know, post-board, I'm on pseudo seven roasts, mana permitting.
No, four. No flashback thing was.
Seven draws of a roast.
Oh, right, sure.
Sure. I'm on about I have that many opportunities to cast it.
Sure, sure.
Obviously, I can only cast it four times because I can cast it twice from my hand and twice from my graveyard.
Yeah, assuming they all resolve.
Assuming they all resolve, absolutely.
And, like, as my cyborg plan shows you, I want to take the game along, trade one for one, which Tasker in the main would literally go, yeah, give me back any of these cards that you've already dealt with. Keep doing it. Turn and turn again while my Karanos bolts you to the face.
Sure. So, Ren, what about in like kitchen table magic, which is, you know, far more your realm? Do you see decks turning up where they sort of have aggressive elements, have burn elements, have control elements, but they're not strong in any of these areas, and so they sort of get lumped into tempo because they're kind of trying to end the game quickly and trying to take it on from all angles at the same time. Is that something that people do in the kitchen table magic, or?
Well, I think generally what people tend to do is, especially in multiplayer kitchen table, is they'll try and work out which deck like did them over last week and then go for that one. Yeah, and it's always sort of a war of attrition.
Sure, so you end up with this kind of rotating metagame, I guess, between your play group.
Yeah, and it's very much a kind of macro meta, if that's...
Sure, so I guess what you're saying is that if this kind of thing would show up, it would only show up in response to sort of other decks facilitating its arrival, I guess? Which is interesting, because... From a competitive standpoint, the reason you play tempo decks is because, with the exception of control, they have reasonably good matchups against everything.
Yeah.
You know, they have pretty good game against combo, they have pretty good game against aggro, they even have reasonable game against mid-range. I mean, you know, Jund probably more so than Abzan, because Abzan really wants you to play sweepers, and you really don't want to play sweepers in your... You know, young Pyromancer decks where you can help it. But, you know, you have cards like Is It Staticaster to help you with that. And it really only tends to be these control decks and these, like, your green-red Urzatron decks that are good against them. Would that ever lead to a situation where someone would want to play a tempo deck in casual Magic?
I think it probably would. I mean, the other way that you tend to see, you know, decks that are more honed in like this, is if somebody has a pet deck, you know, something that they've been working on, you know, and brewing themselves, and they've been, like, you know, sitting down in private and getting all the cards together and everything, and you know,
absolutely,
you know, sort of like what you're doing
with the freedoms of tabletop magic. Then is there anything that you would sort of do if you were building this kind of deck that you can't necessarily do with the constraints of the modern format?
I would put in like the Deadeye Navigator with Palakron, you know, the
Are we talking more like in an EDH format, or would you actually try this in a 60 card format?
Both, to be honest. I've seen it work in the EDH format.
I can imagine young Pyromancer with an infinite mana combo just being horrible, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
that sounds disgusting.
Yeah. Like, being able to just freely generate mana each turn and having young Pyromancer, all you need then is a reliable draw engine and you're cooking with gas, you know.
At that point, you play Monastery Mentor, though.
Monastery Mentor, for sure. The white young Pyromancer.
At that point, I'd probably be using, is it Null Infusion? The colour-shifted version of Recycle?
Tell me what the card does. I was on Hatus during Plane Chase block, so... not Plane Chase, Plane of Chaos block, sorry, so... I'm not really au fait with colour shifted cards.
It's basically the black version of Recycle. Recycle was a green card, 6 mana, which was 4 and 2 green. Whenever you play a card, draw a card.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And then in black, the null profusion, that was it. But you skip your draw step with it.
So I guess what you're doing here is you're going to play either a Teemer or a Grixis list.
You
can't play Pyromancer in Soul Tide.
Oh, no, that's true.
Pyromancer really sets that off. I think you'd want to be playing young Pyromancer. Or you know, if you could look at blue, green, white, Bant.
Yeah.
You could look at Bant with Monastery Mentor. I mean, your hate cards are a lot better if you're in white and green.
I mean, another thing that you can do that's quite nice with it is if you're playing Phyrexian Altar with... Mermatrix. So every time like your creature flickers, you're getting an extra creature that you can sack for more mana of any colour.
Yeah, yeah. So you think you'd go more into sort of setting up with your early game, instead of playing these sort of early game threats, you'd kind of set up with removal and counter spells whilst you make your land drop.
Yeah.
And then, you know, make... So you, I guess you're almost kind of converting into a ramp strategy at this point, you know. Then in the mid game, you make your Pyromancer, get your mana engine going, start smashing out as many cheap spells as you can, your Pyromancer takes over the board, you swing in, it's all over.
Yeah, or as I say, if you're playing for Exodulti, you sacrifice off your board state and then just flame them one last time.
Yeah, yeah, not bad at all.
Yeah.
If you're playing red as well, you've got Perforost God of the Forge, so, you know, every time a creature hammers down, doing 2 damage.
I'll tell you what, right, and this comes from Kerenos and now from you bringing up, bringing in Perforost as well. The one thing I will say, in kitchen table formats, indestructible creatures really do my head in. Like, for me, kitchen table is all about interaction. I love interaction. And anything that lessens the amount of interaction going on in the game really feels counter-conducive to the fun side of it. You know, from a competition point of view, it makes perfect sense. These are very powerful mechanical things to be doing. But when the object of the game is to turn up and have a laugh and do something fun and stupid, like especially in EDH,
yeah, yeah,
I really, really struggle with these less interactive or non-interactive elements. Indestructible for me is a big one because there are so few spells that you can point at that creature to deal with it. You know, you just it probably cuts your opportunities to interact by 75%.
I've got to say that compared to something like Shroud, I think that Indestructible is a fairly minor threat. I mean, going back to the Bubbles deck earlier, I've seen that deck being played in Tiny Leaders.
Yeah.
It's upsetting. You know, the only way that the gnomes deal with it is to have, like, an Arcane Lighthouse to strip their creatures of hexproof.
Yeah, you've also got Glaring Spotlight, I suppose, in that format. Yeah. That's a 3-drop, isn't it?
That is. Yeah. Being able to interact with things is quite the core of the game. I mean, even, you know, Mamo recently said that he wants to try and give players more options to interact with things, which is why he's kind of scaled back the unblockable and he's removed Intimidate as a thing, and he's got rid of Land Walk as a thing as well.
We've got a new mechanic now, haven't we, though, that's Menace, which... You know, again, it limits blockability, but it's not on the same scale as Intimidate or Landwalk. And I think that's the thing, you know, it's the least uninteractive of them, and so it's kind of passed as acceptable.
I've got to say that in terms of abilities on creatures, I think Intimidate was an incredibly bad move. You know, as soon as they took... Fear away from the black creatures and the artifact creatures and gave it to everyone and renamed it, rebadged it, it just watered down the flavour of the mechanic. So I don't mind that being removed, but one of the things that really does annoy me with this is when you get, you know, someone's managed to protect their planeswalker or just being ignored in a multiplayer game of, you know, EDH, kitchen table, whatever, long enough to ultimate their planeswalker, all of a sudden they've got this little emblem sitting on the table, you know.
And yeah, I've got to admit, I am with you here. Like, again, emblems, you know, as a powerful mechanic for competitive Magic, they're very good, but God, they're so frustrating. Like, what do you do once an emblem's come down? That Kiora emblem from the Theros block, Kiora.
Yeah, making 9/9 crack in every turn.
Yeah, like every end step you get a 9/9. It's like, what? How do I beat this? In a tabletop format, it's impossible. No one is packing answers for a 9/9 every turn. It's just not the way you play the game.
Actually, I've got a combo in a couple of my decks that's particularly for that one, and it's Pithing Needle.
Okay.
And Lethal Vapors. It's absolutely hard. It will take care of pretty much any creatures that try and hit the field that aren't indestructible. Yeah. Because you go, right, okay, I'll pick a needle, stop the people from destroying my lethal vapors just by saying, you know, I'll skip my next turn.
The thing is, like, that's an excellent solution to a problem. But it's hard to not help. It's hard to help but not feel like it's a problem that should never exist.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. Like,
back when, certainly when I was playing only casually, if there had have been uninteractive elements in the game, I mean, there was unblockable, there was a fair bit of unblockable, but people didn't really play it in great volumes. And I can't help but feel if there was such game-breaking, huge non-interactive elements in the game back then as exist now, the game would have never got to where it is today. People would have just found it too frustrating.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing for me. I mean, coming back into the game after such a long time, you know, Planet Chaos had happened and the Alarma block had happened, and they brought out this new card type, you know, with the Planeswalkers themselves, and it's as soon as they get to the ultimate, what are you supposed to do with that, really? You know, I didn't understand them, you know, being on a break and coming back into the game. I'm still not 100% keen on them. As clearly demonstrated when I, like, handed you all of my Elspeths that I had. There you go. I don't care. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Because
they make things unfun for people, and I don't want to make games unfun for people. You know?
Yeah, which Elspeth is it? Is it Night Errant, the one that the ultimate one is?
Oh, everything has indestructible.
Yeah, your creatures have, like, flying, first strike, and indestructible or something.
Yeah, it basically turns into, what's it called?
Is it flying, vigilance, lifelink, and indestructible? Like, is that what it gives? Something like that? It gives a bunch of keyword abilities, and basically the reason I picked it up from Ren is because I was building Darien, King of Kjeldor in EDH, which is a deck that I used to play a long time ago, really, really loved. Got bored of it because I'm silly like that, and I just do get bored of cards that I'm playing. Sold it off as a whole, and then bought it all back again as a whole. Because I'm a ridiculous man, and that's the kind of thing I do. I waste money on this game. And the reason I picked it up off Ren is because in that deck, where you're going so wide, and you've got all of these Anthem effects, you end up with a bunch of, you know, 4/4s or 5/5s, because of your, like, Glorious Anthems and your Intangible Virtues and all this kind of thing. And then you drop an Eldrazi Monument and things start to get really real, or you ultimate your Elspeth and things start to get really real, and you end up just winning the game off of, like, a card, because the ultimate effect of that card is so powerful, and if left unchecked, becomes impossible to interact with. You know, and I think we've sort of, off-air, we've kind of discussed this a little bit, and, you know, the way Mark Rosewater has been talking recently about scaling back uninteractivity and, you know, trying to improve the play experience, both for new players and old players. Do we think that, you know, maybe, I don't think we'll ever see the death of emblems, you know, they're still being printed, but do we think maybe at some point emblems could be possible to interact with? Can you foresee a way that could happen?
I think that, you know, if they did a card that said, target player gains control of target emblem.
Oh, that would be glorious. Wouldn't that be fun?
That would be great.
And it would give you a sense of panic when you make your game-breaking emblem, because it's like, I make this, and if it sticks, I win. But if you nick it, I'm just dead.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it was colourless as well, that would just be hilarious. But
maybe an artifact that you could sack to steal an emblem.
Yeah, yeah. That comes untapped, though.
Yeah, so... Yeah, yeah, an artifact that comes in tap that you could, like, tap and sack. That would be great. So, Mark Rosewater, if by some weird coincidence you end up listening to this, we suggested it first. Anything but standard suggested it first.
I'll tell you another thing that would be nice if you could shift it to other players. Poison counters.
Poison irritates me.
Poison irritates me as well, but, you know, it's not going anywhere because, again, it's one of Mark Rosewater's own pet little things, and he said so himself on his Drive to Work podcast.
But it's the worst mechanic ever.
The thing about poison is I enjoy the idea. The concept of having a way that you know, can sap your opponent's life away in a non-traditional format it's cool. It's a really cool idea. The thing I don't like about it is it really feels like cheating, that their cards are almost as efficient as yours, yet they've only got to kill you from 10 life, not 20. It's like the opposite of mill. In the same way that you look at mill and go, well, that's stupid, your cards aren't as efficient and you're doing three times as much damage to win the game. It's the opposite with poison, in that your cards are almost as efficient because you get to play things like giant growth, mutagenic growth, you get to play these pump spells that weren't ever intended to be cast on creatures with infect. They were intended to just be cast on normal creatures. But when they're cast on a creature with infect, they're really powerful. Look at Infect in Legacy as a deck. It's absolutely ridiculous. They play Invigorate and Berserk. Invigorate was strictly unplayable until poison was a thing.
It's funny you should say that, because Matt's just brewed up a deck that's poisoning tiny leaders. It's Infect tiny leaders.
That's just horrible.
It is.
The one thing I can get behind with Infect in EDH, and a good friend of ours does this a lot, and it's hilarious. You let
are we talking about Mr. Jim Forster?
We are talking about Jim.
Let's give a shout out to Mr. Jim Forster, because he's a lovely northern man living in the south, playing with us dirty southerners, and he brings a certain measure of northern cheer to our games, in that he's dour and horrible. We love him.
So he will just sit there, let you guys battle it out. Say you've got a Xenagos, God of Rebels player. They go, right, 24 your face. Guy goes, no blocks. Jim will just go, right, taint and strike that guy. Bang, you're out. It's just so classy.
So he'll cast Tainted Strike on one of his opponent's creatures when it's attacking another player.
Yes.
And knock people out of the game that way, without ever turning his own guys sideways. Because not only is he a genius, but he's an absolute bastard.
That's a thing of beauty.
It's wonderful, isn't it? Beautiful.
I've got to use my cheesy, unfair mechanic to turn you into the bad guy. Absolutely brilliant.
Going back to the Indestructible now, I mean, there's another chap that we play with fairly regularly down FNM, and he has an Avacyn deck. And, you know, having, and this is EDH, so having an Avacyn as your commander, casting it, then shoving World Slayer on it,
right,
that makes things less than fun.
Yeah, that's not pleasant.
No.
On the plus side, at least World Slayer is quite easy to interact with. You know, any sort of disenchant type effect will deal with a World Slayer.
Mm-hmm.
Ancient Grudge sees a fair bit of play in EDH. Unless you... of course, because Avacyn makes your permanents indestructible, not your creatures, right?
So you makes all your permanents indestructible.
So do you just need, like... Is it Merciless Eviction? Does that exile everything?
Yeah, Merciless Eviction works. Unravel the Aether would work.
Council's Judgment.
But again, it comes back to that thing of... It's a casual format. You shouldn't have to metagame.
Yeah.
Like, at the very point that you have to metagame against these things in a casual format, the onus shouldn't be on you. It should be on your opponent who's playing these bent things to say, do you know what? We're not really very well set up to deal with this. You guys shouldn't all have to start tearing your decks apart in order to deal with this. I'll just play something different.
Yeah.
You know, I think as casual players, we have a duty of care to each other. To understand. Yeah, right. To just not be dicks. Like, you have to understand the point of the format. Yeah, absolutely. Wheaton's Law, exactly. The man himself.
It's very true.
You have to understand the aim of the format. The aim of the format, like, to me, the very existence of competitive EDH annoys me. It shouldn't have ever happened. EDH was made by a bunch of judges as something to do in downtime, to pass the time and have a laugh with each other. No one was trying to win. No one was trying to build the best deck. Everyone was just trying to build something stupid and splashy and ridiculous. And still to this day, that's how I build my EDH decks. You know, Ren, you've played EDH with me. I was in your neck of the woods fairly recently, and we jammed a few games. You've seen the way my deck's put together. Like, it has some silly combos in it. Those combos can win the game, but they're all so easy to interact with, you know. And
well, it's exactly the same. I mean, I played you with my Tribal Scarecrow deck.
Yeah, you did.
That is just class.
You know, again, it's just, you know, I love stupid decks that have a flavour. Yeah, I like Tribal deck. I also played with my Clerics deck, which was black-white, which exists because of one card.
Yeah.
One single card. And it's not even a legendary card that this EDH deck's built around. It's a card from Scourge, and it's 3 mana, and it's called Edgewalker. And it makes all of your Clerics, one black, one white, less to cast.
Yeah. How are we doing there? What's his name? Sin Collector. He's a cleric, right?
Ooh. Yep.
Sin Collector for one colourless mana.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Aren't you glad that card doesn't exist in modern? Give me four of those. Tide Hollow Sculler. He's a cleric.
Oh, is he?
I'm sure he's a cleric. Ren, is Tide Hollow Sculler a cleric?
Yes.
He is. Three Tide Hollow Scullers. Give them to me. Sign me up. Yeah, I could go for that deck. The Sin Collector Tide Hollow Sculler Hand Disruption deck.
Unfortunately, Tide Hollow Sculler is only a zombie.
Oh, is he not a cleric?
He's not a cleric.
He so should be.
He totally should be.
That'd be hilarious.
But there is a card that's like Tide Hollow Sculler that is a cleric, and it doesn't return the card. I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but it's the same cost.
Well, that's you're not on about Sin Collector, are you? Sin Collector's one white, one black, one colourless, and he exiles an instant or sorcery from their hand.
No, there's another one that's a bit older, I think, which I do play in that deck because it's broken. But, I use Atheros, the God of Passage, as my commander for it.
Love because, that guy. You
know, what's the point of having a bunch of priests if they don't have a god to worship?
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Flavor, yeah. 10 out of 10 for flavor. And especially Atheros as well, when you consider the priests historically in Magic are usually like battlefield priests. They're normally, you know, you will more regularly see priests who are sort of war zone priests or priests that are surrounded by death. That's kind of the flavour of the fantasy priest anyway. So having like the boatman effectively, you know, having Charon that is essentially what Atheros was, wasn't it? It was Theros's reinterpretation of Charon the boatman. You've nailed the flavour, you've hit it out of the park, mate. I think we've gone over quite a bit today and we're heading pretty strongly into time now. There was a bit of breaking news, I believe, that sort of appeared on our radars yesterday/today. Ren, do you want to go over that briefly? Just this very interesting point that sort of caught our attention?
Oh, yeah, the...
Oath of the Gatewatch.
Oath of the Gatewatch pre-release event.
I'm assuming that everyone will have actually seen this anyway, because it was posted on the Mothership, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
WPM.wizards.com.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, so it came straight from Wizards anyway. So, you know, we're not trying to tell you anything that you don't know already, but it did catch our interest and we did want to talk about it for a couple of minutes.
Well, it's basically the fact that Oath of the Gatewatch pre-release has been announced that it's a set with two-headed giants in mind. Now, two-headed giant is a format that I really like, because it's the format that I really hate. It's a casual team format. What's not to love?
Yeah, for sure. I think that's my problem, is that I'm hyper-competitive, and if I get paired with someone that's not as good as me, I get really irritated. And if I get paired with someone that's much better than me, I think I'm really irritating them.
But that's the thing with two-headed giant. You can, like, build the deck with your teammate. You don't have to be paired off with somebody. You can go as a team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you can be. You don't have to be paired off with somebody who you're going to track down or who you're going to track them down, because quite often you'll find somebody who it's normally the person that you play test your decks against quite often, so you know exactly what their play style is.
So yeah, they actually said in this announcement, didn't they, that they expect tournament organisers to run at least one of their pre-releases as two-headed giant, right?
Yep, and. They did, and also they've kind of suggested that this is exactly the direction that they want to go in regards to this particular set, and I'm glad that they're supporting non-standard formats.
I mean, I will say that as much as I'm not a fan of Two-Headed Giant, it's lovely to see Wizards of the Coast flying a flag for casual formats and saying, you know, look, let's do a pre-release. Because pre-releases are supposed to be fun anyway. Pre-releases aren't supposed to be about going home with 10 packs. They're supposed to be about going home having had a good time. And they're saying, you know, let's run a pre-release that from the ground up is designed to be fun. And whether you like the format or not, I think you have to admire that. It takes a bit of bravery because it's such a macho, hyper-competitive game at times. You know,
I mean, you've only got to look at the some of the casual sets they've done before now, like Conspiracy, for example.
Oh, Conspiracy was a wonderful set, though. Really well-designed set.
Yeah, it was...
Great for Cube.
It was Cube.
Cube staples the box, out the ass.
That's what it was. That's what it was.
And the wonderful thing about it was that towards the end of its time in print, you were getting boxes for, like, 40 quid. It was so cheap.
Yeah, to pick up a box. There's still loads out there because they printed plenty and people only really seem to want to play with them as draft. They're not cracking the packs for the sake of cracking the packs.
Oh, I bought a box of it when I went to Worcester and I played a Mana League, which again for our US listeners is another large store here in the United Kingdom in Worcester. And I went to a tournament in Mana League and I had some store credit with them and picked up a box of Conspiracy on my store credit, cracked the whole box in the car on the way back. And the one thing that I was hoping for, the one thing that I was hoping beyond all hope for, was that I would open a Pelika Worm in foil, because I have a Borborygmus Enraged EDH deck that I'm trying to foil out, and that card is nuts, and I don't want to drop it. And guess what I opened? Just a couple of packs from the end was a Pelika Worm in foil. For those of you that don't know what that card is, it's a 7-mana 7-7 with trample. When it enters the battlefield, you gain 7 life. When it leaves the battlefield, you draw a card. That card is nuts for EDH.
It really is.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it makes me think, I mean, you know, if they're saying, oh, we want to do this with this in mind, you know Wizards are very good at, you know, centering their themes. As I say, the Conspiracy, they wanted a cube in a box, and they wanted something that you could draft, and you could, like, it would interact with the draft.
Yeah,
and,
for sure.
And for this, I mean, I wonder if they're going to do, like, any, you know, your teammate gets this kind of cards. I mean, what was the one that was...
Ivory Mask. Ivory Mask references that's your teammates, doesn't one. It?
It does.
It's effectively a Ley Line of Sanctity that you have to cast.
Yeah, but it kills you and your teammates.
Yeah.
You know, which is brilliant if you're playing, say, something like Emperor. You know, where...
No, I've never even heard of Emperor.
Great format.
Emperor is a great format.
It's one of the spin-offs of Arch Enemy, isn't it?
No, it's incredibly old as format.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
It was the basic idea is you have it's a sphere of influence game. So you have the Emperor sitting in the middle of the table, facing the Emperor, with his two commanders, right? Each of those commanders can either cast spells to protect and enhance the Emperor's creatures and for the Emperor. The Emperor can only cast spells to his commanders, but the commanders can only attack the commanders that are in front of them until one of them is taken out, and then you can attack the Emperor.
Right, okay. I guess it's kind of bringing elements of chess into Magic, is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Where there's sort of some strategic board positioning required.
Absolutely, but the best way to play as the Emperor is, you know, you are setting up the fort, so you want to get, like, your mana base sorted, you want to ramp up, you want to make sure that your teammates are ramped and protected, and if you need to cast a Tainted Strike on one of your creatures that your commanders have, as they're swinging, you can. You know, you want to make sure that that's what you've got, and also you're countering spells because you can counter across the entire board.
Yeah, it sounds pretty exciting. It sounds like something I could probably enjoy. So yeah, the next set that we're getting is going to be all about Two Headed Giant, and hopefully it's going to involve some sweet teamwork mechanics if we're lucky.
Oh yeah,
we'll make Team Sealed something interesting.
Yeah, Team Sealed will be great. And what format is Pro Tour Oath? Do we think that the limited section could involve team, potentially? Is that a thing?
It could be.
Because that would be really interesting, because obviously the Pro Tour isn't a team event.
No.
But if they introduced a team section to it, it would really put a new dynamic into the Pro Tour, like having to help people who later in the competition will be your competitors, having to win with them.
That's interesting.
Really, I would love that. I would love that so much.
The other thing that I really like is, you know, all of the other cards that say your teammates or your, you know, that reference any kind of team mechanics, have all been in silver bordered sets, apart from this Iron
Mask. Yeah, you're quite right. You're quite right. Because Ivory Mask is from Future Sight, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Future Sight.
Yeah, yeah, of course. The point of Future Sight was supposed to be like mechanical spoilers, wasn't it? So, yeah, maybe you're onto something there, Ren. It could well be the case.
But the last thing I want to say, you know, with regards to Oath of the Gate Watch, is I don't know if you've seen any of the spoiled cards, the spoiled art.
Oh, that artwork.
It is very pretty. It reminds me of, like, the seals from... Was it the Urza's block, where you had Seal of Flame and Seal of... You had, like, Seal of Removal and things like that.
There are some seals that are modern legal. It's Seal of Primordium is modern legal, isn't it?
Yeah, it depends.
The seals are from a few different sets, mate.
Basically, they're enchantments that you can sacrifice for effect.
Yeah, they're enchantments that are functionally instant.
But I really like some of the artwork with the planeswalkers holding up their little symbols. That it's very reminiscent of the seals, I think.
Yeah, I think, you know, for players that love flavour, for players that love artwork, for players that are really interested in the Vorthos side of the game.
Join our group.
Join our group. URL will be posted in the show notes to get to our group. It is a huge showcase group for altered art and MTG MTG related artwork.
Fan art of all kinds. So if it's alters, it's, you know, collages, it's
we've had sculptures, haven't we? We had Modfly Alters did an absolutely insane sculpture of Umezawa's Jitte. All rendered up in brass, and he also did a Psychotog, is that right?
I think it was just an Atog.
Oh, maybe an Atog, yeah. Come and have a look. We will post the link to the page in the show notes. The show notes will be available for you to browse over so you can see how silly we are in the way that we communicate to each other. Do check the page out. It's Renfield's baby. He's been working on it for years now. How many years now, Ren? 3 years? 4 years?
3, I think.
Yeah,
maybe it's just gone from
It's gone from strength to strength. I mean, I'm an administrator with him on the page. I joined the page when it was at about 2,000 members, and I think we're heading close to 13,000 now.
We're past 13,000.
Are we past 13 now? Yeah. Wow. You know, we're growing all the time, and we really just exist to show people cool artwork. That's all we're about. We're not a sales page. You know, people do sell through the page, but it's a secondary function. What we're really there for is just to share our ridiculous enthusiasm for all things beautiful and magic related. Like I say, while you're visiting that page, do also visit my page as well. You know, I'm a part of this show, so I'm going to plug shamelessly. And that is facebook.com/MrShyPaintsCards. Also, for all your magic needs, if you're in the UK, please do visit our sponsors, magicmadhouse.co.uk.
If you're so inclined, I'm on facebook.com/Renfield286.
Yeah, Ren's page is well worth a check out as well. Ren does some really cool, like, horror-influenced impressionism. I've always been a big fan of his art, and I own a couple of Ren's pieces, and I'm very proud of them. I love them very much. Jay, have you got any Facebook pages or links or anything that you want to shout out for us? Is there anywhere you'd like people to go and have a look?
Unfortunately, I have absolutely nothing.
Well, I guess, I mean, you're part of the Altered Art page anyway. You're part of the family, so you can just encourage them to come and see the Altered Art page. but I think that's about all we've got time for this week. We're planning to be back in 2 weeks, unless our schedules line up so that we can come back a little bit sooner. But I think it's time for us to wish you goodbye. So from me, Mr. Shy, it's goodbye.
From me, Renfield, it's goodbye.
I guess for me, Jamie, it's see you later.
Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll see you soon. Bye.